And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be here too, Dave. Thanks.
And also with us, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here, David. Thank
well,
you.
Well, we got a lot to talk about. So His Excellency the Governor presented himself at the Pennsylvania Press Club the other day and expounded on his record and also actually was forced to take a couple of questions. And so that whole thing was entertaining. And actually, Steve, you were sitting right next to me, so I'll let you bat lead off here. What'd you think about his performance?
Well, it's interesting, David, because Governor Shapiro spoke a lot about what he calls getting stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
He even had a big poster that was getting stuff done.
Multiple posters.
Several. Mm-hmm. And the initials GSD. Just mm-hmm. kept talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly focused on presenting the idea that, boy, he's doing a lot. That he has really made a difference and got a lot done as governor. And on the lists he had these poster boards with bullet point items of things he had gotten done. I think the first thing that struck me and probably anyone who's paying attention to Pennsylvania is that the vast majority of those bullet points, the things he had listed on those posters that he was touting, were the type of things that the governor can do by executive action. He's not really been able to get things done that a governor traditionally gets done working with the legislature to pass laws and or defeat proposed passage of laws. Instead, he's playing the small ball inside game, doing things he can do with his pen, kind of reminiscent of President Obama. You know, I have a pen and a phone.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
that sort of leadership by executive fiat rather than by the legislative process that he seems to be specializing in. And it's small stuff. I mean, there's things that he's touted are as being so important. For example, fixing I-95 in a record amount of time when there was a fire that caused structural damage. Those are things that are important locally. But they're not proof that a person can really govern a big state with a complex political environment and different regional issues that all need to be balanced. He's playing small ball instead of doing big picture things.
And also, it seems like he wants to dine out on that I-95 thing over and over. It's like that was actually at the start of the year, which is almost over now. And it was impressive at the time, but a lot of things have happened since then.
Yeah, that's originally exactly right. The I-95 issue was a big one, and it was a great victory in leadership. I think we can admit that
and say that for sure. We said it at the time,
it was
for sure.
Great, sure. But it's like Steve said, all of the things that could have been that were accomplished, especially on that I-95 project, were done with executive authority. And especially on I-95, where there was an emergency declaration in place, where he didn't have to comply with all of the sometimes excruciating regulatory requirements, which drag out projects like that. So he was able really to solve that issue with a lot of expediency that normally wouldn't happen in an event like that.
Including help of that type from the feds.
Exactly, yeah, and funding, and lots of funding, right. So Steve's exactly right. All of the sort of victories, the successes that he ticked off, the vast majority of them were regulatory issues, and even some regulatory or executive actions, and even some that some would argue probably shouldn't be executive actions, like automatic voter registration, which he, authorized PennDOT and the Department of State to do, which some would argue should have been a legislative action. But that was one that he, I think, touted as a victory and was an executive action.
Well, he's very telegenic. As always, he never lacks for confidence, and that he, he told his side of the story, and that's certainly his right. It just seemed there were some things that sort of rang false to me. And one of them, he was questioned about the Lifeline scholarships that he had said he was for, that he agreed to in the budget negotiations, and then that he backstabbed the Republicans in the Senate because he couldn't persuade the House to go along with the scholarship plan. And when he was asked about that, that the governor said, oh, well, I'm still for it. And there are other things that I'm for, too, like raising the minimum wage and having a retroactive window for lawsuits regarding sexual abuse and whatnot. And it just reminded me of that warning about the going to a Middle Eastern bazaar, you know, how many times you'll have to buy the same rug until you can actually take it home, that it seems as though, you know, there was a deal, they went back on that deal, and that now that they're going to use that same lure to try to get additional concessions. And I don't think that's going to fly.
With Lifeline scholarships in particular, sometimes called PASS scholarships, that is it's a school choice initiative. It's one that the Commonwealth Foundation has been deeply involved in and we continue to advocate for. Governor Shapiro had talked about it on the campaign trail. He said it was something he would support, that he does support school choice expansion. He said that, and yet he line item vetoed.
Right.
That piece of the budget bill when it was passed so that it didn't actually go into effect. He was asked about it, and I'm glad he was. And his response, he categorized it as unfinished business, which I thought was somewhat encouraging. He wasn't saying it's off the table, it's done with, it's not ever going to get done. He said it's unfinished business. Then, as you indicated, he started to list a litany of other initiatives that he considered to be unfinished business, many of which were really contrary to the policies that certainly the Commonwealth Foundation or the Pennsylvania Manufacturers or the Trucking Association would support. So he's kind of linking this idea of expanding school choice to a litany of left-leaning initiatives that wouldn't be productive for Pennsylvania.
Yeah, to resell something that he already sold, as it were.
Yes.
And so it's
and
like
he's getting more mileage out of selling it again.
And so it's like, are the legislators of the party opposite going to be willing to be played for chumps? I really doubt it.
And I noticed that he does have sort of a short list of things that he'd like to accomplish. I think he said something along the lines of that he has some faith that there are big things to come in 2024, and went down a list of some things that he'd like to accomplish. But I noticed that those things would require legislation for the most part. He talked about minimum wage. He talked about gun violence, addressing gun violence in the state, repealing the statute of limitations for victims of childhood sexual assault, which we know has been an issue. The legislature's been debating for a while, and the school funding formula. Those are big issues that, in addition to the Lifeline scholarships, that we know will require legislation. So I guess it comes back to, is he going to be able to lead and actually build legislative support for his initiatives along those lines,
right?
And is he willing to negotiate? And that's what a governor does.
Yeah.
So the question is, will he be able to do that going forward? Because this year has not really been successful in that regard.
No, you can't say that it was successful. I mean, it's been further complicated by the dysfunction in the House with the very close balance of power, 102-101 in the 203-seat chamber, and a series of special elections that have left things deadlocked. And during that time, that the Democrats won't, come back into session, and therefore the House is essentially, on lockdown. And we've got another one of those specials coming up because the state representative in Bucks County is leaving to become a magisterial district justice. And so we're going to be thrown into another period of deep freeze.
And when it's 101-101 because of a resignation of a sitting member, what we've seen so far is the House just goes on recess.
Correct.
And they are gone during the time it takes to replace that member because they're afraid of what might happen if it's 101-101. The powers that be are simply saying, we're just not going to legislate for a while, even though that's our job. And that could be months that we're talking about where one of the chambers just sits there, and well, they don't sit there; they're not there.
Correct.
The lights are off; and they're sitting somewhere else, but they're not in the legislative chamber. They're not in the hall of the House.
And that's what's so frustrating. That's kind of what I'm talking about when I say that's the function of a governor. That's what a governor is there for, to lead, to actually build a consensus, and to, you know, bring everyone to the table and try to come up with a path forward.
And to use the bully pulpit.
Exactly.
Like, that's what the governor has. The thing that the governor has that most legislative leaders do not have is the ability to go out and speak to the press and have his statements be heard by the whole state. Use that bully pulpit. Effective governors do that. They use their governmental authority as well, the gubernatorial authority, but the bully pulpit is the real weapon they have.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation. Well, there was another sort of too clever by half sort of thing that the governor did. He was asked about the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, talking about the ruling by the Commonwealth Court that that the actions of Governor Wolf were unconstitutional, that the REGI tax is in fact a tax and not a fee and therefore unconstitutional. The question to the governor was, will you appeal that to the Supreme Court? And he said, well, you know, there'll be news on that in the coming days. Well, right before Thanksgiving, right before everybody leaves on vacation, it is announced that he will in fact appeal to the Supreme Court to ask them to keep in place the REGI scheme. And I mean, this is just, I mean, disappointing doesn't begin to describe, because, you know, when he was running as a candidate for governor, he was very dubious about REGI. He romanced the industrial trade unions whose members will lose their jobs under REGI. He earned the endorsement of those industrial unions. He put together a working group, so on and so forth. And now when he actually finally has to choose sides, he chooses the radical Greens against the hard hat working people who will lose their jobs when our power plants go down.
And it's not just going to be the fact that we're going to lose jobs. We're talking about consumers across Pennsylvania are going to be paying about 40% more in electricity bills.
Oh yeah.
If REGI is enacted due to Supreme Court of Pennsylvania action as that appeal gets filed. It's a big deal across the spectrum economically. It doesn't just impact those in the energy industry.
Oh, no.
It's consumers across the state.
And
obviously,
exactly
we
right.
care a lot about those energy jobs, but we care about consumers across the state.
And manufacturers consume enormous amounts of energy that you know, higher energy prices drive inflation because it renders the cost of everything more expensive. And there's a layering effect that when things get more expensive at each level, it just keeps pancaking. And that this is how we find ourselves with many folks who've been living paycheck to paycheck being unable to pay all the bills at the end of the month.
And if you read the press statement that is associated with the governor's announcement of his decision to appeal REGI, it's all about he has to do it because he has to protect future governors so that they have the power to take executive action.
I believe the president refers to that as malarkey.
Malarkey. And we just went through the whole cycle with Governor Wolf, how he was abusing his legislative powers, and we had constitutional amendments pass and become part of our Constitution to rein in gubernatorial powers so that we cannot have that scenario again that we had with Governor Wolf. And now here Josh Shapiro is appealing so that he can protect the authority of the executive to do things the legislature doesn't want him to do that they have voted against as a body.
Yeah, it makes my head hurt, and it just I grieve deeply because the letter of the law is clear. The Commonwealth Court decision, in my view, is absolutely unassailable because the REGI scheme with, you know, buying credits at the auction or whatever that it brings in to the Clean Air Fund, the state, you know, agency, it brings in hundreds of millions of dollars beyond the cost of administering the program. And the law says, look, you, the executive, can impose a fee to cover the cost of administering a program. But when the receipts go beyond what it takes just to pay for that program, it becomes a tax, and that the taxing authority under the Constitution relies exclusively with the legislative branch. Like, this is the separation of powers. Like, this goes back to the, you know, the Magna Carta. You can't do this. And yet this is what the governor is going to press. And while this remains in dispute, no energy investment is going to come into Pennsylvania. Like, nobody is going to risk investing capital in a place where, you know, where the outcomes are uncertain, where you can't calculate exactly what you'll pay. And so, again, this is a great way to drive investment to Ohio and West Virginia.
I think one of the most frustrating things to me about this appeal is that in the statement, the governor actually sort of threw it in the lap of the legislature. And he said, you know, I'm appealing this ruling, and that if the legislature sort of has a better idea, they can come back and we can talk about it. So, you know, that was in effect what he said in the statement. That comes back to my leadership, you know, statement earlier, is it's up to the governor to make a case. And if he really were a strong leader and felt strongly about, you know, working out a different program than what Reggie is providing, then he would have chosen not to appeal. He would have gone to the legislative leaders and said, what can we do? If we're not going to do this, what can we do? But instead, he's sticking with the Reggie and just throwing it in the laps of the legislators and made a statement along the lines of, you know, if they want to take their ball and go home, then, you know, we're
I know what you are, but am I?
Right. So it's just, you know, just sort of.
Well, and he also, and this is, and again, the not to be too much of a stickler about it, but at the press club, that Governor Shapiro said that his working group agreed that having a carbon tax scheme would be a good thing. The working group did not conclude that at all. The working group said for Pennsylvania to be involved in any kind of carbon tax scheme, it would require the participation of all of the states in the PJM interconnection service zone, that all of the states where energy is being put into the grid, that they would all need to be under the same rules. That is a very different thing than what the governor said in his public statement. And again, that's just it's misleading, and it's not true.
It seems that Governor Shapiro doesn't like to be. He likes to characterize things the way he wants them to be.
Yes.
He does not seem to be willing, at least in this case and a couple other examples we've seen, to accept responsibility for things
bristled,
that would
yes.
be perceived in any negative light.
Yeah.
Interesting, at that press club event, one of the questions that he was asked was when he became aware of harassment allegations against a former legislative affairs secretary that became a scandal that came to the public eye. He ducked that question and he said, I can't speak to any particular case, and just kind of tried to move on, almost as if he was questioning the motives of whoever asked him that question rather than just answering the question. And we've seen that pattern when it came to transparency, the same thing. He was challenged on the information he makes public about his schedule and other things that normally governors do, so folks can keep an eye on what's happening in the governor's administration. And he says, I would just fundamentally reject the premise of the question.
Like, but it's a fact. Governor Wolf posted his public schedule online,
right. And
the Governor Shapiro has stopped doing that.
He's not, and that isn't an answer to the question. Like, someone asked him the question. He said, I would fundamentally reject the premise of the question.
Yeah. So this is, again, it's kind of a through the looking glass kind of experience. But again, we work in the political world and we know that you know, things come with spin, and it's rare that you know, get an answer straight up. But this was, I thought, a particularly impressive performance in, I don't know what you'd call it, misdirection, perhaps. But anyway, this is, like I said, this is the world in which we work. And so we do the best that we can to tell it straight to you listeners. Thank you for being with us. We're running down to the end of our time here. Steve, where can folks go to learn more about you and your work and what's going on with Commonwealth?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your work and what's going on in the world of trucking?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.